Okay, today I want to discuss with you something that's not related to the parasha, but relates to this year. This year is Shemitah. Okay, if you go into a Sfarim store, you'll take note that they have a section. Many Sfarim stores have a whole section now on Sfarim that have been written, some old, some new, published, about the laws of Shemitah. So I would like every so often, Blineder, if we have an opportunity to discuss some matters relating to Shemitah.
Once every 7 years when we go.
Okay, so I have here in front of me a new Sefer from one of my favorite authors, Sha'arei Shemitah. The author is Rabbi Tezner. Rabbi Tezner, Rabbi Yehuda Naftali Tezner. Rabbi Yehuda Tezner. Before Rosh Hashanah this year, I spent a lot of time learning through his Sefer, presenting two things from the Sefer, Sha'arei Yomim Noiroim. And in the summer, we spend time learning Sha'arei Nechama. He has probably about 10 Svarim. All of the Svarim, they look the same. They have the same cover. And they have the same title, Sha'arei. Sha'arei Purim, Sha'arei Chanukah, Sha'arei Pesach, Sha'arei Nechama, Sha'arei Yom Noiroim. And luckily for me, at least, he just published a few months ago, this is from the thinnest ones I've seen, a Sha'arei Shemitah. And he, in his unique way, is a phenomenal writer, and he's malakate the Yesodos and presents them in a very, very, very pleasurable way, the Yesodos on Shemitah. Yes, I like. No, it's in Hebrew. This is in Hebrew. I don't know who he is. His Svarim, I asked in the Svarim store. The Moichar Svarim told me that his Svarim are extremely popular. They sell out. They sell out in a moment when they come into the store for all of the Moadim. Every Moif, every one of the Moadim, he has another volume. He does. His name is Yehuda Tezner. He has Haskamas from Rav Wozner, from Rav Karelitz. He must be an Israeli. I assume he lives near Yisrael. And they're really good. How can I tell you? I really get a lot out of them. What? Well, it's a light. It's not a modern Hebrew. It's a Yeshiv Shehebrew. That's one of the reasons why I could relate to it. Some of the Sfarim, they're written by Israelis. They're written with a little little modern Hebrew, and that I always slows me down. The more yeshivish Hebrews, much easier for me to relate to. So this is like a real yeshivish Hebrew. This is not a modern Hebrew at all. And I just gotta tell you, I always find his form very, very good, very enjoyable, very clear. So let me present to you a couple of yesodos, a couple of pages of what he presents. Number one, from the very beginning, how many times does the mitzvah of Shemitah appear in the Torah? Three places. Okay, we'll go back to the basics. Parshas Mishpatim, Parshas Kisisa, and Parshas Behar. Parshas Mishpatim, Mishay, Shonim, Tizra, Esar Tzech, of Yosaf. I don't go to the Psukim. These are the three Psukim. The shortest of the three is in Parshas Kisisa, where it says, Sheshes Yomim Ta'avoid, 6 days you shall do work, Uvayom HaShvi'i, and on day seven, Tishbois, Bechorish Uvakotzir Tishbois. And the Gemara has a drasha that's not the Pshut HaShemikah. The Pshut HaShemikah is just dealing with Shabbos Kodesh. We're not dealing here with Shemitah. But the Gemara makes a drasha. The Gemara says it has to be in reference to Shemitah because on Shabbos, Bechorish Uvakotzir Tishbois are those the only two malachas that you don't do on Shabbos. And Shabbos you don't do 39 malachas. So the Gemara says you have no choice but to say that this pasuk is alluding to the mitzvah of Shemitah. And the Gemara learns another makor for Shemitah from this pasuk. Okay, so this is interesting. And now, what do we take out of this derech agaf? Is that being that the Torah describes the mitzvah of Shemitah in terms that refer to Shabbos Kodesh, there is a very strong connection between Shabbos Kodesh and Shemitah. They both represent and remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. It's not just a business plan. It's not just something that's good for the land, nor that the land should produce in the future. We give it a year of rest. It is the reminder for us of Briyas Ha'olam, just as the Torah says Beferish that Shabbos Kodesh is a reminder of Briyas Ha'olam. Okay, now What are the reasons? Let's now go to the Rishonim. Why did the Torah tell us to observe Shemitah? What are the Tamei HaMitzvah? So there are many reasons. So first of all, we just said before, as we mentioned before, the main reason is Chidush Olam, creation. Who created this world? Hashem. A whole year to reflect upon this principle. Once in 7 days we reflect upon this idea, but then we're given an entire year to reflect upon this as well. Second reason given by this comes from the Chinuch, the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch very often tells us the tam, the reason for the mitzvahs. He says to give a person the Midah of Vatronis. We're going to discuss in a few moments in much more detail that in the year of Shemitah, a person l'chatchilo is mechuyev to be mafkir his property. It's not enough just to sit back and what's called afkosa de malka. It's Shemitah, and it's against my control. Everything that I own, all of my fields, my farms, my orchards are hefker. It's more than that. A person has an obligation to stand up in front of three people and make a declaration, I hereby forfeit, I'm mafkir, I annul ownership of the peros on my field, anyone who wants can come and have it. That requires a very great degree of greatness for a person to make such a statement. Who today would go to the bank, get up in the middle of the bank, stand in the bank in the lobby, can you imagine this? And say, Rabbis, I want everyone to know I have my bank account $1 million. And I hereby want, for the good of society, it's hefker. Whoever wants can have the money. I have to be out of your mind to do that. Who would do such a thing, right? But
would it?
They're 100 on the spot. But that's really what the Torah tells you to do. You own property, you own farms, you could have millions of dollars worth of assets, of fruit. You're not mafkir, by the way, you're not mafkir the land. The land is yours, but the peros, what grows on the land is hefker. Or anything that grows on the earth is hefker. Anyone who wants can come, can take, free for taking. Why? Because Hashem told me to do so. And I am a kofof, I am subservient to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an incredible midah for a person to do that in his life. How many times does he do that in your lifetime? In the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it creates upon a person, impressed upon a person, a midah, a very great character trait of emunah and vatranos in dealing with his earthly possessions, which carries him through his entire life. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that is one of the main reasons why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to observe Shemitah, that we should get into the mood of giving away. Give away things. If you give away all your food once in 7 years, then when you're in the third year of Shemitah and you get a knock on the door from a homeless man and says, please, I have nothing what to eat, can you give me what to eat? It won't be so difficult for you to go into your kitchen and take out and give him a delicious meal. When a person comes and says, we won't need no money for a school, an institution, for a Dvar Tzedakah, it won't be so hard for you because you already will have accomplished, acquired this good character trait every 7 years on a communal level by being mafkir the peris of your property. Yeah.
So how does Rabbi Tessa then extend that, let's say, to loans where
that Shemitah's Kesafim, we're going to come to that later on. Okay. Loans, when it comes to loans, the principle, you're saying that, but we make a principle not to give up money.
Right.
That's already from the Gemara. The Gemara talks about because people stop lending. Because we have, an Echrami, it's only a Bidiyavid. Writing a principle is only a Bidiyavid because we have come to a point where we would not even lend money. We would not do favors, lend money if we would not get our money back.
No, okay. But you have this other thing in control, you give it to the guy during Shemitah.
Oh, Mechiras, I'm going to talk about that soon. We'll come to that in a few moments. Echrami, okay, there are a lot of things to talk about. Okay, when it comes to belief,
we're
going to talk mechiras. Had the mechira, had the mechira. I want to get to it today. Yeah, I want to talk about it in a few moments. Had the mechira in a few moments. There are hundreds of issues when discussing the laws of Shemitah, but this is just a very basic building block of Shemitah. It comes from the Chinuch. It's a Chiddush. I don't think the average person knows this or think about this idea. The average person thinks of Shemitah. It's you recognize Hashem's in charge. You don't even think about Briyas HaOlam. Comes the Chinuch, it's Briyas HaOlam. Hashem created the world. It's not that Hashem is in charge. Hashem created the world. Number two, you should get used to being a good person. Get used to the Midah of Vatronis. Once in 7 years, I'm going to force you to be Mevater, and maybe by forcing you to be Mevater, it'll be good practice, so that when I'm not forcing you, on your own free will, you'll also be Mevater, you'll also be willing to give up things that you own in order for the better of someone else. Okay, the third reason given is by A third reason given by the Chinuch is faith, plain and simple. A person should get used to the concept of emunah, Kodesh Baruch Hu, now you're not working, you're not planting. Ma noichal b'ashana ha-shavis. What am I going to eat in the seventh year? It requires a great degree of emunah in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. A person would not ever enter into this state of emunah if he was not forced to do so. Hashem forces us to have emunah once in 7 years, and hopefully that will overflow to the rest of the 7 years, and also having proper emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Emunah and bitachon. Okay, that is said by the Chinuch, and that's all said by the Kli Yakar. And then the Kli Yakar says an incredible chiddush. Incredible chiddush, another reason why we have the year of Shemitah. I mean, this is really off the charts, and I don't know how practical this is in modern day and time. We're on this Madrega, but the Kli Yakar, the Oilos Ephraim, Rabbi Ephraim Lenschitz, he lived a long time ago. He lived, I think, more than 10 generations ago. How many years ago was that? How do I know he lived 10 generations? Because in my class in Yeshiva, there was an Einikol, a Ben Achar Ben from the Kli Yakar. Ben Achar Ben, and they correct, and they had a tradition in the family. They had a legend in the family that the Kli Yakar said he was a very holy person. He's going to come after he dies. He's going to come to the weddings, of his descendants for 10 generations. So the one in my class was the 10th generation.
Did he come?
I guess so. I hope so. I didn't see him. Okay, but that's the legend. Okay, but then he says the following. He says that in ancient times the custom was, and you see this in the Gemara as well. The Gemara discussed this, is that you would work a land for 2 years, and the third year you would let the land lie fallow. That was the custom. You don't overwork the land. The land only has that many nutrients. And if you overdo it, you'll destroy the land. And the minuka oilam, I don't know what they do today. I don't know how this works in modern technology and farming. How often they rotate? They rotate in crops. They let the land lie fallow. I don't know. You have to go online and see what they do. What they do in America, throughout the world, what the customs are. But in ancient times, the Gemara says this. It was the minuka oilam by the goyim to work the land for 2 years, and the third year you let the land lie fallow. That's the way it was when the minhag olam, when the Torah was given. Hashem says, Klal Yisrael, you're coming into Eretz Yisrael, you are going to live in a state l'mala miderech hateva. You can work the land even in the third year. And don't worry. And then you know what? You can work it double. You can work the land 6 years. The goyim have cycles of 3 years. 2 years you work, 1 year you don't work. 2 years you work, 1 year. It's like, you know, you don't work every third day. Sunday and Monday you go to work. Tuesday the day off. Wednesday, Thursday you go to work. Friday is a day off. That was the minhag olam by the fields. 2 years you work, 1 year you lie fallow. By you, my people, I'm going to let you work the land for double cycled straight, 6 years nonstop. And then guess what? The seventh year, you're going to let it lie fallow, but it's going to be even a bigger miracle. Because in the sixth year, you would think after overworking the land for 6 years, the land would be dead. It wouldn't be able to produce. You know what's going to happen? In the year six, it's going to be so strong, it's going to produce enough for 3 years. For six, seven, and eight. In other words, it's just the opposite of the way the average person looks at Shemitah. We look at Shemitah that we would work the land, if not for the Torah telling us otherwise, if not for the Torah interfering with our parnasa, we would gladly work the land in the seventh year. We would just figure out a way not to destroy the land. We would fertilize it, whatever we would do to supplement the land for its nutrients. The Torah came along and interfered with my plans. No. Shabbos, seventh year, do nothing. The Kli Yakar says just the opposite. Just pumfakert. If it was up to you, ordinary mortal, you would only work the land for 2 years.
How do we know that?
This is what he says. I'm not making this up. What?
Because when we...
The Gemara in Bava Basra does mention such a concept. Okay. Even time of the Tamaroyim.
It doesn't mean let the land lie fallow. It just means plant something different.
No, it means let the land lie fallow mamish.
Okay.
Mamish, let the land lie fallow. What? There are different adaptations. So we know that there are today, modern day, today you altered crops. Okay, that's a technique. That's a technique. But the ultimate, the ideal thing would be to let the land lie fallow, to let it replenish, to let it rejuvenate. That would be the ultimate benefit. So he says, in the time the Torah was given, that's the way things were. You go back in time, go into a time machine, and go look at the agricultural society in time of the Torah. The Umas Olam, they worked the land 2 years to go to Eretz Canaan, among the Canaanim. They worked the land for 2 years. The third year, they let the land lie fallow. Hashem says, like, you know, parish of Sota, you give the Sota water to drink, her stomach's going to burst. And if she's innocent, she's going to have a child. Supernatural. You're a supernatural nation. I'm going to allow you to work the land more than the average. I'm totally opposite of the way the average person looks at Shemitah. You can work it in the third year. And guess what? You can do this for two cycles. Double. Kefil. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, work the land nonstop. And you'll think, wow, after overworking the land, going 6 years straight, it's going to break down, the car is going to overheat, it's going to be gone. Guess what? In the year 6, it's going to be so strong, it's going to produce enough grain for 3 years. In other words, it's a bracha that is off the charts. Cannot be explained among the scientists. There's no, the world looks at Eretz Yisrael and look what they could accomplish. What they can do, what the earth can produce, they're baffled. And you know, this to some degree is very true about modern day Eretz Yisrael. What they have accomplished in Eretz Yisrael, and the Umos Olam say this. This is clear. What they have accomplished 70 years, the state of Israel, in 70 years, they've accomplished more than civilizations have accomplished in thousands of years. And that's really what Eilu Sefarim says for Shemitah. Cultivate the land. The Umos Olam go very slow to build democracy, to build a government, to build an Eretz Yisrael. It takes thousands of years till it builds up. 2 years, take a break. Another 2 years, take a break. No. You go full force. Go full force, and you will succeed. Just completely the opposite. The opposite of them. So this is a fascinating approach to the Mahalich of Shemitah. Okay, then he brings down some more Midrashim. The Midrashim is that it is our ticket to Eretz Yisrael. In other words, that we have to appreciate. The Ramban talks about this. The Ramban says he first mentions by Sibaratius. And then he says, okay, I'm not sure, let's leave it out. Same idea, Bitachon, Eretz Yisrael, our appreciation of Eretz Yisrael, we have to recognize Ki La Hashem Haaretz, it's Hashem's land, it's a gift. Eretz Yisrael was given to a gift. This goes back to the Ramban, actually connects me to your Rashi. The first Rashi challenge. How did you say that?
Yeah,
what's your expression? The first Rashi challenge? So that's what the Ramban says. The Ramban says that Shemitah, the mitzvah of Shemitah, directly ties into our guilt feelings. How could we occupy the land that was possessed? How could we take the land that was controlled by the Canaanim? It's not our land. Hashem said, I gave it to them, and now I'm giving it to you. But you have to be loyal. It's all part of recognizing the emuna that it's Hashem's land, and Hashem can decide who gets it, for what period of time. Our acknowledgement that Hashem created it, and Hashem gave it to them, and took it away from them, and gave it to us, is fulfilled in the observance of Shemitah. That's what Ramban says. The Ramban ties in the first Rashi, the guilt that we have with taking away land that belonged to another nation, our recognition that it's Hashem, we're not doing anything. You shouldn't feel guilty that you have displaced seven nations. Don't feel guilty because you're not the one that's doing it, Hashem is doing it. Hashem created it, Hashem gave it to them, He gave it to us. And the way we acknowledge that it's not us, but it's Hashem who gave us Eretz Yisrael, is by observing Shemitah. Okay, so it's a different mahalach. That's a different, whole different focus, different angle at looking at Shemitah. You're coming back the whole year of Shemitah. You're coming back to the first Rashi in the Torah.
Where is this Ramban?
This Ramban is the Ramban of Ramban Beir al Derech Zeh, one of those three places. Ramban Beir al derech ze shehayamim b'shavua heim haskar l'masav reish v'ilu hashan yirum z'la shayyim b'yim ha'salam v'nei v'yem esik v'zuchusam shleid shol hurak mikoyach emunah b'reish z'baru l'kim ashman v'sarits kim furish b'rashi sham b'shem chazal am Rabbi Yitzchak. So where does he say this? One of those three places. He doesn't quote, probably somewhere he mentions that, but I don't have the whole thing in front of me here. Probably somewhere here, but it has to be one of those three places, either in Mishpatim or in Kisis or in Parshas Behar. I'm willing to bet Parshas Behar. Okay? That's the main place. The main place is in Behar, or likely you'll find the Ramban there. Yeah?
Just go on a limb here.
Yeah?
Granted that there's a miraculous aspect to the results, okay, in Eretz Yisrael, that were purely the case, then you couldn't replicate it elsewhere. I mean, they send out agricultural experts all over, especially in third world countries, to try to replicate the methods of farming that they do. So,
look at Gush Katif. They didn't last one day without the Jews.
They didn't try to do it. It's just the opposite. But in friendlier places,
yeah,
they always sent experts to do this, like in Africa.
Yeah.
So then, in theory,
yeah,
you wouldn't get anything like those results because
you wouldn't get the same results. That doesn't mean you wouldn't improve the agriculture.
I don't know. Okay, these are ideas. We're throwing out ideas.
Right.
Okay, now there is a medrash. The medrash, this medrash, when you open up a book on Sefer Shemitah, among the number of so many people, they focus, they zoom in on one very popular medrash. The medrash we know more in reference to Nasa v'Nishma, Giborei Koyach Ose Devar, Pasuk in Tehillim. The Medrash Vayikra Rabba says, what's the pshat? Who are the Giborei Koyach, the people of mighty, of great power, who do Hashem's Devaru, his words? The Medrash is, Om Rabbi Yitzchak B'Shoimrei Shviyas HaKosov Medaber. Okay, this is probably the most popular Agadah that you're going to find with regard to Shemitah. The Giborei Koyach, anyone that is observant in all of the signs for the Keren Hashvius, all the advertisements that they praise the farmers who are willing to observe Shemitah, they are the Giborei Koyach, mighty of strength, who do Hashem's bidding. Why? What exactly is the nature of the Giborei Koyach? So he presents a couple of answers. First, the answer, which is very pleasant, is it is the longest lasting mitzvah. Most mitzvahs that we do are for the moment. You put on tefillin. How long do you need to put on tefillin for? For a second. How long do you put on a talis? Whatever you want. You want to do a sukkah. So you want to sit in the sukkah? So sit in the sukkah. You don't want to sit in the sukkah? Don't sit in the sukkah. If you want to really be machmer, how long will it last? 7 days. Okay, you can't sit in the sukkah for more than 7 days, unless you live in Chutz La'aretz, then you'll sit in the sukkah for 8 days, and Shmini Atzeres. Okay, you'll find yourself in a heated discussion with your next door neighbor. Should you be in the sukkah, should not be in the sukkah, but every mitzvah has its time and place. The Moadim are 1 day, 7 days. Matzah, is it the mitzvah of 1 day? Is it a reshus of 7 days? Mitzvahs are short-lived. The mitzvah, which is possibly the longest mitzvah, is Shemitah. An entire year. There are many halachas that we're going to discuss all the various parts of Shemitah. To be involved in Shemitah for a whole year, to sustain the sanctity of the mitzvah in a long year, this requires Giborei Koyach, requires enormous discipline, enormous strength. Arlis 3, it's not as complex. But that is why we call it Giborei Koyach. Another reason Giborei Koyach, as we said before, is Hefker. It's unfortunately, we live in Chutz La'aretz, we have no clue. We have no appreciation of what the farmers go through, and we don't have any appreciation of what the average citizen who's not a farmer goes through, because we don't have their produce and all the different problems with what you can eat, what you can't eat, how to dispose of the leftovers, and the extra cost that's involved. It's a very big business, obviously, and this hechsher and that hechsher and so on and so forth. It's a very complicated matter, and it does require a certain degree of, you can get very worked up. And people do get very worked up, as we all know. You just have to follow the news a little bit, and there are always things going on about Shemitah. It's something that requires Giborei Koyach to endure the mitzvah of Shemitah. Okay, now let's go jump ahead quickly. Now, when it comes to Shemitah, there are basically seven Chavtza Amudei HaShiva. There are basically seven branches of the mitzvah. There are seven categories of Shemitah. Just to touch them what they are now, we'll go detail later on. What are the seven halachas? Number one, avodas karka. There are things that relate specifically to the farmer. What is a farmer allowed and not allowed to do? Is he allowed to weed? Is he allowed to cut? Is he allowed to protect his field? Things that involve actual cultivation of the earth. That is category number one. Category number two, hefker. The mitzvah of Shemitah requires the Baal HaBayis, the owner of the farm, of the land, to declare that everything that he has in his property is null and ownerless. Whoever wants, that's a whole different thing. Forget about it, I'm not going to step into my karka. Avodas HaKarka is one. There's a chiyuv to be mafkir. And if, besides being mafkir, you have to maintain that degree of hefker. Anyone who wants to come into your field in the Shemitah is allowed to come inside. We're going to learn later on, you're not allowed to lock. You're not allowed to lock your field. You're allowed to have a fence. You're allowed to have a fence. You're allowed to keep the door closed, but you're not allowed to have a lock on the door in Shemitah. The only thing that you can do, if there are bandits, there are some looters who can cause damage, the Chazon Ish says, you can lock it. You can put on a padlock around your farm, but you have to have a telephone number or a little sign. Anyone who wants access, call this number to receive the code, or to come to my house to get the key to go inside. That will accomplish that a ganav or a terrorist is not gonna go in, because he'll have to first come to you, and you'll right away see who you're dealing with. You're not gonna let him inside. But any erlich person, honest person, you have to give him full access to your field. And Chazon Ish even says that you're not allowed to write on the sign that you only can call me between 3 and 4. I'm in Koilel. Karen Hashvius. So the Koilel goes until 12:30. We daven mincha at 12:11 and 12:09, and therefore you can't call me until this time. These are the hours. Now, you're not allowed to do that. 24/7. It is not 24/7. He writes nighttime. There are certain times it's acceptable that you don't bother me. Don't call me after 10 o'clock. Don't call me from 10 o'clock at night until 9 o'clock in the morning, but you have no right to make hours from 9 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. The door to the farm must be left open. It must be left open. The door can be closed. There may not be a lock, but if there's going to be a lock, you have to have a place where a person can have access to your field. And this, he writes, we'll talk about this soon, this is only Bizman Hazeh. Because Bizman Hazeh, according to the Chazon Ish, Shemitah is only Midrabanan. Bizman Shabbos Hanesh Yekayim, when it was Yovel and Shemitah's Deraisa, the door must be open. You're not allowed to even close the door. And if you have a fence, you have to make breaches in the fence for easy access when it's Deraisa, because it has to be Vashana Hashvis, has to be Hefker. Okay, the pasuk has to be with the Tashta, you must. That means you have to make openings when it's the right so that people do. That's how far it goes.
How much can a person take?
What? Whatever you want, whatever you need. Whatever you need. You can't allow to do business. No, certainly not. What you need.
Not for business.
Only what you need at this moment in time within reason. I mean, you don't have to go every 5 minutes back to the farm to get another apple. You can take a couple for a day's worth. But you're not allowed to go. You're not allowed to hoard.
So what's the halakha if there's a war going on?
A war going on?
Like now.
Sakana. No, so then of course that's a different, that's a whole different story. Of course, that's a sakana's nefasha, says daicha kolatar kula. That it goes without saying, you might have a fence. We're talking about where it's, you know, it's in within the security area. Just a question of people coming into the field and taking things. So the problem is, if you just let the door open today, there are people that will damage. These fields are very delicate. There's equipment in there. There are pipes. And today, it's a farm. Today is not a farm from 1,000 years ago. Farm today is full of who knows what's in there. High tech pipes and probably security cameras. And a lot of different, I don't even know what's in there, but you don't want the field just open for people, looters, ganavim, to come in and destroy your property. But on the other hand, you have an obligation to allow anyone who wants to come and take anything, that any aftergrowth that goes by itself. So there has to be a balance. And the Chazon Ish, he sets out the rules, the balance. By the way, the name, the big name in the laws of Shemitah is the Chazon Ish. Okay, you talk about the Erev in Brooklyn, the big name is Rav Moshe Feinstein. We talk about Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, there's only one name that really conquers all ground, is the Chazon Ish. And to many people, to the surprise of many people, the Chazon Ish, no, I'm sure he was, of course he was, but to a very big degree, the Chazon Ish was a very big makel. It's a makel. Unlike what the Chazon Ish's reputation for as being a machmir, and everything, when it came to Shemitah, the Chazon Ish was from the big Mekilim. And he was one of the biggest advocates. Okay, there were other people as well, as you mentioned, but in his day and age, in his time, what? That's a whole different story. But as far as the people already that are observing Shemitah, people that are observing Shemitah, as far as the details of how it's to be observed, the Chazon Ish was the person who established the law of the land to a very large degree. Very large degree, and we'll come across some of his chiddushim tomorrow. But first, right now, let's just finish up with some of the seven basic streams, the seven elements. Number one, we mentioned avodas hakarka, okay, the laws of what exactly you can do in the field. Number two, there's a halach of hefker, which has many parts, and that's the section to itself. You must be mafka the land. Number two, you're not allowed, even after you mafka the land, don't go around preventing people from coming into the land. The land has to be mamash hefker. Number three, sefichim. Sefichim means offshoots, things that grow by themselves. I didn't touch the land. I didn't plant anything, and I'll go and I wake up the next day. Look at that. There are things that are growing. Things grow by themselves. Things that grow by themselves have a kedusha. They have kedusha, and they must be treated with the proper kedusha, which Belineda will come and discuss what that kedusha is. Number four, hefsid. You're not allowed to destroy. If I go to the supermarket and I buy fruit. You're allowed to buy fruit. You're buying fruit and vegetables. And now, guess what? I don't need it. I was expecting to have for dinner 10 people, and there's a snowstorm, and only one person showed up, and no one's going to eat the food. How do you dispose of the food? There is many laws of describing hefsid, how you're not allowed to dispose of, and what you are allowed to dispose of. Halacha number five, business. Okay, Eretz Yisrael is an agricultural country. Everyone, to some degree, is involved in. It's a high-tech country, but it's also a good part based on the kibbutzim. The whole Eretz Yisrael was established. And when they established the state, there was no such thing as high-tech. Okay, so it's how one whose parnasa comes from the land, how what he has to do in the year of Shemitah. Okay, then comes number six is Bayer. Bayer means if I have, Bayer really borders on Hefsid, but Bayer means if I have good food, and now it's just not available, now it's no longer found in the fields. It comes a point in time that if I have food that's Shemitah in the closet, I have to dispose of it in a permissible way. You're not allowed to destroy this hefsid. You're not allowed to destroy it. But there's a time when it has to be disposed of in a permissible way. Not destruction. It must be consumed by a certain point in time where it's no longer available for the animals in the field. That is called bayer. It's not like hefsid. It's a different category of disposal. And then category number seven, which is really a whole different category, shmitas kesafim. It's related, not related, to Shemitah, then the Shemitah year, all loans are canceled. If someone owes you $1 million and the Shemitah concludes and you did not collect and you did not write a prizbol, you're out of luck. You're not allowed to go to him and take him to court and say you owe me money. He has an obligation to pay you back. Make no mistake, just because Shemitah has passed does not mean the person is not free from paying back his debt. But you, the lender, have no power to demand payment. He has a moral obligation, an obligation, not shamayim, but there's no legal way for you to force them to pay money. That's so to review the words, because these are the main, you're learning the whole year of Shemitah. You see all over every there are a lot of even yeshivas which they tell the Talmidim that you have to spend time every day learning. When the Shalom Fadim Sifasena, you're not living in the land, you're not observing Shemitah, but at the very least you should at least learn the halachas, the shvis, mishnayis, to learn halachas. There are seven yisoidos of Shemitah to review. Number one, avodas karka, what exactly you're allowed to do to the earth. Number two, hefker, the obligation to be mafke. If you own produce, you have an obligation to declare it ownerless. Number three, sefichin, if something grows by itself, what kedusha does it have? How do I deal with fruits that grew by themselves? They have kedusha. Number four, hefsid, the prohibition to take a good fruit and to throw it in the garbage. You can't take an apple and throw it in the garbage. It has kedusha, you're not allowed to destroy it. Number five, business. If I own an orchard, what do I do during Shemitah? Can I engage in business? Can I sell it to the market? Obviously, someone's making money in Shemitah, right? You go to the store, the fruit's not free. You go to the store, you go to the grocery store in Eretz Yisrael, it's not for free. In fact, it's even more expensive in the year of Shemitah. So someone's making money. How exactly do you deal with that? Business. Number six, bayer. It comes a point in time, if you have an apple in your refrigerator, you got to eat it. You got to eat it because time is running out. It's during, you're coming to a point in time where it's no longer available in the fields. And number seven is Shemitah's Kesafim. You have to cancel all debts. Okay, there's a lot more, but neither over time, we'll pick up from here.